I feel there are three reasons why everybody should see this movie. Three reasons.
Okay, only three.
One is the story. It's an interesting story. Two is, of course, they do amazing things with special effects that are kind of jaw-dropping and amazing. But three, the only other film that achieved something like this was another Chris Nolan film. And do you know what I'm going to say?
The Prestige?
No.
Following?
No!
Memento. The Dark Knight?
Memento.
Batman Begins?
Memento.
Wait, no, I get it. Insomnia.
No. Because halfway through this film, and this is why I recommend the film for everybody, even people who aren't going to like it. And I know someone who's not going to like it. I think my wife, Ann Hearn.
Uh-huh.
I said, you have to see this movie with me. Because there are parts of this movie, I said, I can't say anything about it because anything would be a spoiler. So I'm not going to say a lot about it except halfway through this film. Chris Nolan did the same thing he did to me in Memento, in that he altered the way I was viewing the film. He altered my logical world. And in the middle of Memento, I felt I was Leonard. I felt I had amnesia. And I didn't know what was coming, and I forgot what had happened. And in the middle of this film, my reality was so twisted. And another thing too, David, why do you feel like you felt I would not like this movie? Why did you feel that?
Because in the past you've voiced your discontent with movies that layer on rules upon rules upon rules.
Yes, yes, and you are correct. And this movie did do that. However, there was a difference. And because of the difference, I'm able to amend my first directive. When the subject matter of the altering of the rules is like bullshit, like Pirates of the Caribbean to get a chest of booty, you know, then I, or there are other things like to win the battle of war or to kill the terrorist or to do one thing or another, I feel like the whole thing is made up. But at the center, at least I felt, and maybe I was just jerked around, at the center of this incredible special effects tour de force was a very simple, personal movie disguised as this movie. And all of the added rules were not like rules to like keep Act One going. Like I talk about in the podcast, The Heroes, episode 14, I believe.
Right.
Lost in Act One. Most of the time, when people add these rules, they do it so they could stay in Act One and keep the film going. That isn't why they added rules in this film. In this film, I thought the reason they kept adding rules is because that's how our minds work, especially when we're in a crisis, which is what all of this was in this movie, was a crisis. We keep rethinking and double thinking and backtracking and looking to the future and saying, if I only did this, and what if I did this? And that's exactly the way our minds work. And I felt the thing he was getting to was not to Act One, elaborating Act One, but was creating Act Three, which I felt he fully delivered on. Now that was me. I mean, did you feel the same way?
Well, I'm afraid my articulation won't be quite as eloquent as that, Stephen. But
as long as you don't belch. I mean, did you feel the same way?
I feel like, you know, I talked a lot about this film with my colleague Matt Singer at IFC, mm-hmm. and something that we weren't huge fans of was just the sheer amount of exposition that was necessary.
Yes.
In the film. And I understand on a podcast with, or not a podcast, I should say, a radio show. Speaking of which, Stephen, because we're going to be on the radio, we should refer to the Tobolowsky Files from now on as show instead of podcast. I think that would be
Okay.
Because
we are a show.
We are a show now. So.
Oh, they, in fact, didn't they show Groundhog's Day last night?
Yeah, they aired. They aired. What do you call it? The classic last night.
So. Yes.
Jeff's on vacation. He'll send us the feedback when he gets back.
Oh, great.
But oh yeah, he on an interview with Elvis Mitchell on The Treatment.
Yes.
Nolan explained that a heist movie is the only movie where it's okay to have just scenes of straight on exposition because the audience like wants that.
Yes.
You know, they want to know what the rules. That's what's so fun about heist movies.
Yes.
But I feel like he kind of took it a couple of steps too far for my taste, in the sense that, you know, the first hour is spent delivering all these rules, and then even when you get there, there's still a crap ton of rules that he still has to deliver to you, like, once you're in the heist itself.
Yes.
And ultimately, you know, any sort of exposition is going to take away from kind of the like, those aren't elements of the movie you can enjoy as much the second time around, I'd argue. Having seen this movie three times.
So the continuous exposition?
Yeah, I think it kind of hurts the longevity of the film, and you're spending time, you know, communicating the audience exposition where you could be, you know, developing some of the characters or the character, and some of the more, you know, personal conflicts. That being said, and it's kind of a movie that, like, unfortunately, I feel like I like less and less the more I see it and the more I think about it.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. Like, the final sequence at the ski resort, I was a huge... I loved it when I watched it for the first time. I was like, oh my gosh, look at these stunts. That's something I didn't feel I got enough credit in the movie. The stunt work I thought was spectacular. Like, some of the stunts that, mm-hmm. that people were able to do. But, you know, a lot of people compared it to, like, you know, the final scene in a Bond film, or even just a set piece in a Bond film. And I kind of felt that the second time around. Like, the pacing of that sequence, again, the first time around, it's awesome, but then the second time, it's kind of like, yeah, we've seen action sequences similar to this before, and there's this kind of sameness that creeps in to the final, you know, 45 minutes.
I'm like nodding my head yes.
Right.
I mean, to everything you're saying, in a way, I felt that the movie kind of two-thirds of the way through it was achieving some kind of poetry. And then came the next rounds of exposition. And at that point, you know, once you get to the point of poetry, once you get to the point where you're looking for tops, spinning tops in scenes, where you as the viewer are looking for a child's face in a scene, where you as a viewer have totally bought into the worldview and are buying into the poetry of the movie, once you go back to exposition, it pulls you out of that play.
I agree.
And you know... The thing I thought when we got to the last section was the thing that I know my wife is going to think when we get to that last section is everybody's dressed in white. I don't know who's who.
Yes.
But if I got through that section thinking, because I had totally bought the reality and I was all viewing them as projections. And that they had all become the same. Everything had become the same because you go to a deeper and deeper level and identity of things becomes less and less clear. On the first level, I mean, this
but
is...
But I thought the projections were equally faceless throughout the entire movie, like whatever level you're on. If the movie had done that, I would have thought that was genius. But I thought that if the movie had done what you're describing, that would have been awesome. But I felt like the three levels felt almost the same. Like, Limbo was different, obviously, but
yes. The
other level, like, Limbo, again, all the dreamlike stuff I thought was amazing. When I say dreamlike, I mean dreams as we conceive of them, you know?
Yeah.
Fungible, Paris folding on itself, anti-grav fight sequence, You know,
the scene in the hotel was like breathtaking.
I agree. Everything about the hotel was amazing. Okay, not only the anti-grav fight sequence, but even just that opening scene with Mr. Charles. I just love that entire. The hotel, I think, was like the kind of highlight of the movie for me, because remember they're kind of in the van and everything's going off the hook, everything's crazy, and then he's like good luck, and he hits the button, and then like instant silence, and you're in the bar, and that's kind of like it's arresting to me, you know, to see that, and then Leonardo DiCaprio explaining to the Mark that they're in the dream, and then the entire like bar shifting gravity, incredible. Everything's incredible about that whole sequence.
Yes, and at that point of the film, I was like so into it.
Yes, I agree.
And so bought it. But you know, the thing I felt without being spoiling, you know, it is spoiling a little bit, is I felt, at least watching it this time, for me, there was a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. That after, you know, when you have Pirates of the Caribbean and all that stuff, the end of it, you've got nothing in
your hands.
Right,
whereas there is some emotional core to this film.
Yes.
You're saying, yeah.
And the emotional core, you know, about, and it, should I say what I felt it was?
I guess if you're listening right now, like, if you don't want to hear spoilers, you should probably leave for Inception, so.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
It just, to me, I always feel when I read a script, if you can simmer it down to one sentence, what it's about, it's a well-written script. This script comes down to, it is about a promise kept. And any way you look at it, that leads to redemption for each of the characters. It is a promise kept for a father to a son. In the bedside scene with the son, I was disappointed you tried to be me. It's promise kept with Leo and his wife. It's a promise kept with Leo and Watanabe, who is a guy who he really, ultimately, that's the ultimate promise kept, is to somebody who you don't really know and don't really trust. And he keeps his word to him. And that is the salvation. And then at the end, you know, we're left. You know, there is redemption for him at the end, and I thought the ending was not cheap. I thought the ending was pretty damn good.
That's really interesting that you conceive of it that way. I think that's a pretty rich reading of the film. I don't mean that in a bad way, you know, in a demeaning way. I thought Devin Faraci at Chud.com also had a pretty interesting reading of the film. In that he sees the movie as a metaphor for filmmaking.
Uh-huh.
Here, I'll read it from his article. The heist team quite neatly maps to major players in a film production. Cobb is the director, while Arthur, the guy who does the research and who sets up the places to sleep, is the producer. Ariadne is the screenwriter. She creates the worlds that will be entered. Eames is the actor. This is so obvious that the character sits at an old-fashioned mirrored vanity, the type which stage actors would use. Yusuf is the technical guy. And Nolan himself more... And then I'm going to skip forward ahead. That leaves two key figures. Saito is the money guy, the big corporate suit who fancies himself a part of the game. And Fisher, the mark, is the audience. Cobb, as a director, takes Fisher through an engaging, stimulating, and exciting journey that leads him to an understanding about himself. Cobb is the big-time movie director who brings the action, the spectacle, but who also brings the meaning and the humanity and the emotion.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a rich, at least it's like a rich reading of the film that I think so.
Yeah. I think that's great. You know, I think there was a lot said in the movie about the relationships between men and women.
Well, what I thought was most profound in this film was... go ahead. You elaborate first, Stephen, on that.
Well, it's just the relationship with Leo and his wife. You know, that was a very intense, difficult relationship in which the important thing was not the truth, but was being together. And it didn't work because they ended up lying.
You have no experience with this, right?
It's and then the brilliance of Extraction versus Inception. And that's what happens in a relationship, is you end up putting the idea in another person's head. And that idea grows. And there's no way you can stop that. A typical female reaction to a guy, and I don't say this to diss women, it's just something I've heard a lot in my life, is he didn't support me. Whether it was with her career, with her motherhood, with taking care of the house. You know, that's a big one. He didn't support me. And you have this in a metaphoric way in the movie where it costs, it's up to you to question her life or her soul, which I find is very true in the real world. And it seeks, as Leonardo DiCaprio says in the hotel, it can create or it can destroy. And that's what ends up happening with so many relationships. And it's interesting that the relationship, the pure relationships, in a way, were not the sexual relationships, but were the father and the son, where the son finally understood the love his father had for him. And in Leo for Ken Watanabe, or Kenzo Watanabe. I love this guy. Watanabe. He was great in, he was in Die Hard, right?
No, I don't think that's right.
It wasn't the same guy who gets his head blown off at the beginning?
That's Nakatomi.
It is?
Yeah.
I thought that was Watanabe.
I think we all look the same to you, is the problem.
Oh, come on. As long as you serve egg rolls, it's fine with me.
Oh, man. Steven, you're lapsing to your early date. Anyway, I think, that's pretty...
I mean, that guy's a fabulous actor.
He's pretty good, although he was kind of difficult to understand.
He was difficult to understand. He was a general, wasn't he? In what movie?
The Last Samurai is what you're thinking of.
Please, not that movie.
Hold on for a second.
Come on, what's his IMDb?
Hold on, I got to take a phone call. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, this movie. One of the worst movies I ever saw was the Last Samurai, and that movie made me want to evoke the strict use of the three montage rule. You can't use more than three montages in any film. It can't bear up. And The Last Samurai pushed me into montage overload. Montage after montage after montage of Tom Cruise getting well. Then Tom Cruise, you know, the montage of him training. Then Tom Cruise making love. And then
he didn't make love in that movie, Steven. You're just making that up because you wanted to see that.
Maybe, but you get the
idea. No, I'm 100% sure. I would have remembered that scarring me if that had happened.
That one where the girl was feeding him rice soup or something?
Is that what they're calling it these days? Anyway, one of the things I like about the movie, and you'll excuse me, I need to start getting dressed while I'm talking to you.
Oh, God. Thank God I don't have the TV camera going.
Is one of the things I like the most about the movie is how, he asks the question at the beginning of the film, what is the most resilient parasite? An idea, you know? Yeah. And this thing that, like, one sort of nugget of an idea can take hold of someone and completely change not only their life, you know, their way of thinking, but the entire course of their existence. That I thought was really compelling, because we know, instinctively, we know that that happens and that it is true, right?
Yes.
But, yeah, so the, you know, the sort of way in which they engaged in idea creation and kind of those rules I thought were kind of cool, because they're kind of like these psychological rules, you know. Someone's like, why don't we make up like a thing where he's like, yeah, screw your father over and split up the empire type of thing. And then Leonardo DiCaprio's like, no, we can't do that because, positive reinforcement's always better than negative reinforcement type of thing. And you know, they're like, yeah, it sounds like he's got some pretty deep-seated issues with his father. And then Leonardo DiCaprio's like, that's excellent, because the more deep-seated the issues, the stronger the emotional catharsis. And it's like, it's like, okay, I didn't even think about it that way, but that's kind of true, actually. And all the way they set up the whole incepting, I thought was pretty brilliant. But the ultimate sort of notion that an idea can change you is, you know, I think pretty compelling.
And I don't think anything of all the, a lot of times when I see movies with lots of exposition, I feel that the exposition is mainly an excuse. In this film, I felt everything was really thought out. Everything was really thought out all the way to the end. You know, they didn't let it down. You know, I was very happy when I got to the end of the ride, which is what it was like.
Right. You know what I've been I've read a few articles about this topic, and also I've heard this mentioned on IFC, was about how the kind of amorality of the movie. Usually when you see a heist movie, there is some kind of that's not always true. Yeah, well, usually when you see a heist movie, the person that's being heisted, you're usually given some reason to root against them.
Uh-huh.
Any, like, heist movies in recent memory that I can think of, usually there's some reason why, like, even if it's, like, the person's, like, a kind of a dick, you know? There's some reason that you're rooting for the protagonist. Here, there's no, you know, there's no, that's not there. There's no there in terms of that. And I'm wondering, you know, I think because there's just so much going on that we can forgive that. But I wonder if the film might have been stronger if the main conflict was better presented in terms of, like, why these people are incepting and kind of there. It's a pretty troubling like idea to that you can change the course of someone's existence without them even knowing it, type of thing. You know,
I felt the thing that Chris achieved with this movie was he destroyed without it being a piece of crap. Because a lot of people do this and you end up with a piece of crap. He destroyed the linear nature of the narrative to where it isn't going in one direction. That actually you can go down. You could go down and down and down lower. And like all the elevators going down and breaking through the bottom floor of the third level of dreams into limbo. You can go down further to find answers. You can go up to find answers. He created a three-dimensional palette there, and I thought he played it off in a very real way, in that the big emotional moments of the movie were created by the father in the bed, who is like about the smallest part in the film. I thought Tom Berenger was great.
Yeah, I thought all the performances were excellent.
Wonderful performance. And then, of course, you have a great payoff at the end with Leo and the kids. It's just a great payoff. And a great payoff with his wife, too. And there, you know, you feel you're dealing with something that is not even in the real realm. But you buy it. Like, did you think this when they were in the first level of dreams and all the rain and then the army comes after them? That they were knocked off the road by the train?
What do you mean, did I think that? Like,
Right. That the thing that the wife had said continually about a train is going to come through.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going, like, the number of trains that were in the movie. And I thought, what is that train? And I thought, did Leonardo DiCaprio create that train? Because of his wife.
That didn't even occur to me, honestly, because the idea that was presented was like, she only really starts interfering the deeper they go into his subconscious.
Yes.
Which is why that didn't even occur to me. But he does give the train that look when it goes past, you know? The train goes past, and Leonardo looks out the window at the train, and he kind of has this look that's kind of this knowing, like, oh my god, like, did I? There's this, like, kind of knowing, like, what it is, but also uncertainty about whether he caused it or not, you know?
Yeah. I'm becoming, you know, very fond of Leonardo DiCaprio and Matt Damon. Very fond of these guys. I mean, you know, I thought Leonardo DiCaprio as a straight action hero in Blood Diamond was terrific. And I thought one of the best performances I've seen in years, really, was Leonardo DiCaprio in the Scorsese film.
Shutter
the
Island?
Departed. The Departed.
Oh, okay.
That was awesome, that performance. And you know, and in this one, too, this film... You can't put it in any category of whether it's a action film or a, in a way, I felt it was a very small personal film dressed up in gigantic action sequences, but it was very personal. You know, I was really thrilled to see it. You know, I guess my bottom line is I think that's why everybody should see it, whether they like it or not. Because it is a film that really does not try to imitate, doesn't say, well, let's do another Salt, let's do another Day and Night, let's do another, you know, whatever. Let's find one of those templates that everybody loves and follow it. I mean, this thing was following no template that I could figure out.
Right. I think
Heist is the closest, but that, you know...
I just feel like, so first of all, I agree, I think everyone should see the movie, you know, and I think it's, you know, very original, and a lot of sequences are really well done and unique. But I feel like the ideas and the emotion were conveyed better in Memento, I thought.
Oh, like, yeah.
The exposition, you know, the expositional elements were conveyed slowly and artfully in that film.
It was conveyed by the device of the film, so
exactly.
It didn't have to be verbal.
Exactly. Also, I felt like that movie didn't hit you over the head with kind of the emotional payoff as much as this movie did. Like, the idea of that movie, like, even the closing lines of that movie, right? Let me pull them up. And after this, I gotta go.
Okay.
But let's see, I have to, here we go. He says, I have to believe in a world outside my own mind. I have to believe that my actions still have meaning, even if I can't remember them. I have to believe that when my eyes are closed, the world's still there. Do I believe the world's still there? Is it still out there? Yeah. We all need mirrors to remind ourselves who we are. I'm no different. Now, where was I? And he's not talking about his wife. He's not talking about killing anyone. He's not talking, you know, he's just talking about his need for certainty.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, like, it doesn't need to tell you what he's feeling about his wife. In this movie, you have Leonardo literally telling you and his wife what he's feeling about his wife.
Yes.
And in Memento, he didn't need that. And that's right. Kind of where I feel like this is not Nolan's best film. Again, I hugely enjoyed the movie, but I don't know if I liked it quite as much as you did.
I was surprised by it because I think, you know, you did a good undersell job on it. But I was really surprised at how it affected me.
Right.
I was very affected by the movie.
Well, it sounds like, you know, this movie is great because it kind of, you can get out of it what you put into it to some degree. You know, you saw this relationship stuff that I didn't see really. I mean, I saw it, but it didn't affect me as much as it did you. And knowing... kind of the things you've gone through based on the podcast, I can definitely see and respect that, you know? But, it will reach people in different ways. And, so, you know, some people are, like, really caught up in the whole, like, figuring out whether it's all a dream aspect. Some people, like you, are taken with the relationship elements. And some people just, like me, maybe just for the pure visual grandeur.
Oh, yeah. don't underestimate that.
Indeed. All right, Steven, I gotta get going.
Talk to you later.
I'll talk to you later. As of now,
that episode.
I'm going as fast. I gotta. Let's end this. Check out the Tobolowsky Files at tobolowskyfiles.com. All right.